We'll call the Board of Supervisors back to session. Item 7F, update on the Shasta and Scott River systems, the out-migrating numbers. Ms. Nielsen.
Yes, thank you. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. And I think a few board members and myself and other staff, certainly water users, have been looking at out-migrating Salmonid numbers this year and in previous years. And at the last board meeting, Supervisor Cobb Seth brought up that we need to get information out about our out-migrating fish numbers. And I think that at this board meeting, I wish that Supervisor Haupt was here. I know that this is of great interest to him, but I think this is a really opportune time to bring this information to the board. There is a lot happening right now. The Shasta and Scott rivers are under curtailment orders, meaning that unless the river flows are at a certain CFS, there is no irrigation diversions. And the Klamath project last week was allocated 50,000 acre feet to irrigate over 200,000 acres. And so they were allocated 12% of what is needed to irrigate the project and grow crops and livestock that is vitally important to feeding America. And for every acre foot that goes to the Klamath project, 11 acre feet will go down the Klamath River or stay in Upper Klamath Lake for sucker species and for coho and Chinook salmon. So, you know, something that I've heard since I started working for the county from several board members is that the Shasta and Scott Rivers do a fantastic job of producing both Chinook and coho salmon, and that it's our in-migrating numbers that need work. But another thing that board members have really been vocal about is that what we can really control is our out-migrating fish numbers. So over the past few weeks, and I do not pretend to be a fish biologist or scientist, but I'm more of a policy person, but I have done some just very, I would say, basic research, and we'll start off with the Shasta River, and I want to make clear that this today is to start a dialogue and hopefully continue that on. I know that there are some efforts to really promote projects in the Shasta and the Scott that I think will help not only agriculture but will help fishery species as well. And from 2000 to 2022, there have been 15 years that Chinook salmon estimated out-migrants have exceeded a million zero-plus or one-plus age numbers. Notably in 2001, which we know is a drought year, there was over 5 million Chinook that out-migrated the Shasta River system. In 2012 through 2015, again, drought years, there were 2 years where out-migrants were over 5 million and 2 years where out-migrants were over 3 million. In this year, we get an update every week, and the rotary screw trap from January until last Friday has produced an estimated 1,300,000 Chinook that have outmigrated the system. I would like to note that these represent both high water years and low water years, and in several of these years, river flows would not have met the State Water Board's curtailment orders for river flows to allow irrigation of the Shasta Valley. Moving on quickly to the Scott Valley, I did the same work from 2000 to 2022, and I would like to note that there are several years where out-migrating Chinook numbers exceeded 1 million fish, and since 2018 through 2022, we have seen an uptick in out-migrating Chinook numbers and out-migrating coho one-plus age group. And this year, there is an estimated 26,554 coho that have out-migrated the Scott River and an estimated total of 203,000 Chinook that have out-migrated the system. And again, these represent both low water and high water years, and in several years, water flows were not the minimums that are now determined in the State Water Board's curtailment orders for the Scott River. I think moving on, that we produce a lot of fish, and me speaking for the county, we want to see more fish coming back. But I think that our out-migrating numbers are really indicative of the number of fish that Scott and Shasta can produce. I have been a part of meetings where fish biologists have said that the habitat in the Shasta River is so abundant for fish that they grow so quickly that they have heads that are much too small in comparison to their bodies. We know how to grow fish here, and I shouldn't say we. Producers know how to grow fish here. The systems know how to grow fish here. There are several options for improving our river systems, many of them on a volunteer basis. They should all be on a volunteer basis. We have had a lot of restoration activities in the Shasta and the Scott Rivers. We have the largest safe harbor that is now being litigated in the Shasta River, the largest safe harbor in history of safe harbors, and you know, that would put more water in the river system and the tributaries to the Shasta River that would improve habitat. There's been a lot of restoration in the Scott River. And I think there are some other low-hanging fruit. I think there is a real opportunity for developing water storage projects in the Scott Valley, whether it be the high mountain lakes or some really key storage systems within the valley or close to the valley floor. There's a lot of momentum behind that from irrigators. I think that groundwater recharge is a really key tool for supplementing river flows. And in Governor Newsom's recent executive order, he is putting an emphasis on groundwater recharge, and I believe that we should be making another pull or another push for recognizing groundwater recharge as a beneficial use of a water right to allow irrigators to recharge groundwater. So again, I plan to, you know, provide more information in the future. Hopefully that information is funding towards some of these projects that will help continue to support fisheries. And today's presentation was a start of a conversation, and to fulfill Supervisor Cobstaff's request, which was to provide information on out-migrating fish numbers. I will be finishing up my charts today. I will be sending those out, and it's just the start of this conversation. And I think there's a lot of momentum from irrigators that will drive many of the projects that I briefly mentioned. And I also think that it is important to note that we are seeing the Klamath watershed agricultural community come together in a way that it hasn't before. I'm really excited about this, and I'm really excited to see that the results that provides. And so with that, I'm happy to take any questions. I believe we have some comments as well.
Well, we'll take the comments first.
Yes, okay.
Silverston, you anticipated my mind. Just say your name, of course, for the record.
Sari Sommerstrom from Aetna. Hello, good morning, and thank you for putting this on the agenda. It's so important. As you probably know, I'm a retired watershed consultant who's worked in the Scott River system for 30 years, and came out of retirement hibernation, awoken from retirement hibernation. I'm not a very happy bear due to this curtailment and how it was put together. And I've always been pushing for balance between the fish and farms, and know we can do it. And so when the pendulum went too far, that awoken me, and I've been trying to help get better information out. And I think part of the issue on the juvenile out-migrant data, we are fortunate that there's a weekly update given by Department of Fish and Wildlife on the out-migrants for the two rivers, just as Elizabeth mentioned. And last year, the data, though, was very unclear what was the difference between raw data, which is the number of fish that are caught by the rotary screw trap, and then it has to be extrapolated to what the actual population estimate is. And there was very low efficiencies on those traps. And so when you see raw data of 10, 20, 50 fish, it looks terrible. But then when you extrapolate it, like in the, especially the Scott River, it's a very low trap efficiency, 1 to 5%, you know, that's 10 fish become 1,000 fish. And so they now finally put on their report at the bottom, raw catch numbers are not population estimates. But I do feel that a year ago, that raw data was what helped drive the political effort to get the extreme curtailments here, because people only saw those single or double-digit numbers and didn't realize that they were extrapolated out to be a lot better than they looked. So that's very concerning to me. The good news, I'm going to speak primarily for the Scott because I understand it better than the Shasta side, is that the graphs do show that we're above average on the Chinook and way above average on the coho. In fact, a new record for the number of coho that have been coming out as of this date. And that, again, that's a tribute to what we've been doing in the Scott for helping improve habitat there and everyone paying attention to what we can do. I also want to say that there's a bi-weekly Scott Shasta Flows meeting, Zoom meeting with mostly the agencies. And I finally became a participant of that just a month ago. I didn't even know it existed. It's been going on for several years. And the agencies talk among themselves, and a few of us non-agency people have asked to be part of those flow meetings. And that's, again, the data is presented, and we need interpretations of what that data means. And context is everything for what it means. And again, raw numbers don't give you context. So I really, I'm glad that Elizabeth is becoming part of that group now. And but you know, as you know, a lot of people aren't paid to be at those meetings. And so like, I'm retired. and people, as irrigation season gets going here, it's very hard to attend a midday meeting understand that. For context, again, I think it's really important that we do better communication. Scott Valley, I'm not the voice for Scott Valley. Some reporters have contacted me because they know me from the past, so I can say my two bits. And sorry, I'm going over time here a little bit. I'm going to wind up. But I think it's really important to have a voice for Scott Valley farmers and ranchers, and so I've been working with two other ladies, Theo Johnson and Lauren Sweezy, to put together a group called Scott Valley Agricultural Water Alliance, or AGWA for short. And today is our launching time, and I'll turn it over to Theo. But before I do that, just to announce that we feel we need a voice. It's not a political group, it's a voice of communication, of explaining the issues and of what's going on, because there was no image of what Scott Valley's about. We're not San Joaquin. We're not severely overdrafted. We're not overdrafted at all, you know, and so we were just being, I felt, not properly interpreted by outside media, let's put it that way. So we're trying to get a more friendly face to what's going on and get the facts out. So we have put together like a white paper on the coho situation in the Scott, a 6-page with graphs to show all these trends and what's been going on. And so I'm going to, if that's okay, to turn it over.
Oh, absolutely. I'll take care of that.
Okay, yeah.
Do you have copies of the white paper for us? If you don't, you can get
I have one. If I can get it. And then it's also on.
If you get it to me, I can certainly forward it to the board.
Okay, and then it's a PDF format.
And it'll be in my packet.
It's also online as well? Is it also online as well?
It will be today. That's awesome. What I wanted Theo to describe.
That's fine. Yes. Okay. I'll take care of it. No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I see there's one online that she's been introduced. I believe Ms. Theodora Dowling, Johnson.
Battery 100%. Are you there?
We're here and we can hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm sorry I'm not there today, but as Sari mentioned, we're trying to roll out our first press release for the Scott Valley Agriculture Water Alliance and introduce our website, which we've had some great help from Corey Hayden putting that website together, and I'm kind of proud of it. But yeah, I'm really excited about this group. As Sari said, we need a voice, just putting out some of the basic facts and trying to communicate the knowledge that we have here on the ground. So one of our goals is to get to the media, but we're also going to get our information into the hands of the State Water Board and their staff And we wanted, of course, to reach out to you as well. And we're happy to share our website, which is scottvalleyagwa.org. And that's scottvalleyagwa.org. I'm so grateful to Sari. We call her our science nerd. She's helping us tremendously get our facts right, and she knows things that I don't even know that I don't know about the history of the coho here and the status of our aquifer. And Elizabeth did a great job of highlighting. We're also pushing on our website for solutions as well. We're not turning a blind eye to the fact that there is a drought, and groundwater recharge is kind of at the top of our list. So Sari also helped us put together somewhat of a white paper on the idea of groundwater recharge in Scott Valley. So, but I think the coho white paper might be our most impressive piece of work so far. Thank you, Sari. And I hope you take some time to look over our website. We've got 7 things you need to know about our water crisis. We've got a myths debunked section going through the myths that I think are driving the current State Water Board policy for us, or regulations for us. And I think those myths debunked are really important, and we should all be armed with that knowledge. So thanks for letting me speak.
Absolutely. Thank you, Theodore. Ms. Johnson, Ms. Nielsen, do you have any follow-up, or are you ready for board questions?
I believe that I'm ready for whatever the board wants to throw at me.
All right.
Yeah, I appreciate this conversation a lot. After working 30-plus years ago for the Forest Service and Fisheries down in Happy Camp, and specifically working on fish habitat and all the tributaries leading into the Klamath, I know how important fish habitat is and how well it can work. I appreciate all this work that's being done, and I know how much it can help. This is what we need to do and continue to do, and groundwater recharge is part of this, and it's huge for our system. It's huge in agriculture. It's going to help a lot, and we need to make sure we can keep doing it along with all these other projects that we're trying to get moving forward. We need to keep pushing forward. That's all I've got.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yeah, I guess I've been here too long. You know, we should have been doing this years ago, and it's unfortunate. And I think I mentioned this summer storm, you know, here recently with all the ag people and my rights and all that stuff, which I get, and that's a true statement. I hear the same thing when I'm at the coast. And we're fellow Americans. Can we come together and work on projects? Because we have not done a project. We pitch a fit. We spend a lot of money on high-priced lawyers on the Klamath dams over water, and yet we're in a drought, and it's only getting worse. It's not getting better. And so what can we do for ourselves? Let's not spend that money elsewhere. Let's put it here into a project, whether it's the High Mountain Lakes, which should have been done years ago, or groundwater recharge, which we should have started as soon as they started the Cygnus stuff. Let's do something for ourselves instead of pitching fits about something we don't have say in as much control over as we would like, because we're not king of the castle. And I've always said this, we do things for ourselves, get ourselves off that radar screen, because the bigger issues aren't here. They're in the Central Valley. They're elsewhere. That's the focus I want to put the effort. Moving forward. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it.
And to that, Supervisor Valenzuela, I believe that we are starting to see some momentum with the agencies as well, who are critical in the groundwater recharge piece and the High Mountain Lakes. Mm-hmm. You know, the conversations that the county's been having and irrigators have been having, think you're starting to see some momentum behind it. I mean, we really need to capitalize on Newsom's order particular to the groundwater recharge piece, and I will be bringing items to the board for approval based on the board's support in the past of groundwater recharge projects and recognizing it as a beneficial use. And I know some of that legislation had fallen apart in the past, and I think this is a great opportunity to reinvigorate those discussions and agree. I know irrigators, we want to see abundant salmon everywhere, for, you know, not only for the environment, but for the tribes as well. So those projects are key to this, and agency support is key to that as well.
Supervisor Kotze?
Sarah, you may have something for.
If I can add something to what Elizabeth said about aquifer recharge. 2016, there was an aquifer recharge project in Scott Valley. It was the first one ever permitted in the state of California. It was a nice press release that came out by the State Water Board that year. It was just a small pilot study. UC Davis monitored it for us because we wanted to make sure we weren't drowning out the crop either by putting too much water on in the winter. And that permit came through in 2 days because Governor Brown, in his executive order, said to accelerate permit approval, 2 days. This year it took 5 months to get a similar permit for a broader medium scale project on the east side of Scott Valley. And there were protests and those were addressed. CEQA is still a major obstacle. And so to me, if a governor through their executive order can say accelerate the permitting, it's not clear in the current Newsom executive orders that we're gonna get that fast treatment on basically a no-brainer. And if there's something that the board could do to help accelerate those permits and multi-year permits, we have to do this every year and expensive every year, multi-year. We have, you know, we have it all outlined in our GSP. We know what we're doing, so it's not starting from scratch. So that would be where I'd encourage the board to help politically get some oomph to permit expediting on that. Thank you.
Just as follow-up to that, that's the project that when it first started in 16 was dropped in 17, is that correct? And then through the coalition, isn't this the one that we funded through the coalition?
Correct, the pilot study.
So, I mean, the Upper Mountain Lakes have been on the table since Supervisor Armstrong was here. We've been working on that for the 16 years I've been on the board, but I think what's happening, there's new momentum, I think, out there to actually get to solutions, and you know, I applaud that effort. We've had tribal buy-in on the Upper Mountain Lakes now, and the agencies are weighing in support of that. All of this is good. I mean, yes, it should have been done 20 years ago, but it is what it is, and we'll take it because it benefits both all of the entities involved. With regard to the charting you've done for the last 20 years, so were there curtailments in that 20 years as well? I don't think so, other than the last 2 years.
Yeah, there were.
Last year and this year.
So last September 2021 was the beginning this curtailment order. Before that, not to my knowledge, any state-mandated curtailments within the Shasta and the Scott.
Okay. So, and where I'm headed with that is that, you know, we've been working with the agencies for a very long time to try to get to solutions. We started the supplementation program because the state dropped it. The Scott and Shasta, I can't remember, it's the S, it wasn't SOSS, but it was something like that. At any rate, they dropped the ball and just quit doing what they were doing for recovery in those systems. And the county picked that up, and the Yurok Tribe, Nature Conservancy, Farm Bureau, came together and started the supplementation, which ended up in what we see now as the safe harbor, because of we were getting too close to providing 50 pair of coho into the Shasta system that ag needed protection. So that's what drove the safe harbor dialogue. But that's all over the course of 16 years. And at a time when we picked up the ball in the recovery plan that Scott and Shasta Recovery Plan. That's what they were doing. There were only 9 male co-hosts in the Shasta system. So, you would have thought time was of the essence, but here we sit. We produce out migrants. We're producing fish. And the projects that have been done in the Scott and Shasta systems do not get acknowledged. They don't get credit for what great work they've been doing, and especially for fish. I applaud this information that you brought forward to us today, and it needs to, get a higher profile in John Q. Public's eye, because things in Siskiyou County are not bad when it comes to out migrants. Now, yes, we control that more so than we do the in incoming spawners. And that's not to throw blame at anybody on the outside. I think there's something happening between the mouth of the Scott and the Shasta and the ocean, whether it's a dick or whether it's a sea Shasta. Those may be a factor that we don't know about. Ocean conditions could be another factor. I know that through the coalition, I think it was the Yurok tribe that proposed the pit tag project. You can help me out, Ms. Nielsen, on this, where they put gauges or registers further downstream so they could count the number, see how far these out migrants are getting versus just that, I guess they were relatively close to the mouth of the Scott and Shasta, which we supported, and the coalition supported. Those are great projects looking for future solution. So, it's not over. Yes, we're in a drought year, but my biggest concern is with these curtailments is that we're drying up a water regime that's existed for, 100 plus years. And the groundwater recharge that we lost this last winter that went downstream is not going to benefit fish that are going to be hanging out here over the system during the summer, because that groundwater recharge is a slow release into those systems, at least from my knowledge, that are beneficial to fish. And I know that it will be, incumbent upon ag now to have to come up with yet more water that should have been placed, during the winter on the landscape, and yet it's gone. And I don't know how you make water at that point. So, thank you for the information. I'd like to see it posted on our website, the 20-year graph, and just show it. And if there were curtailments over the last 20 years, I'd like to see it. But it's interesting, even in the Wales, WALES report, when he goes back, it was the Department of Fish and Game at that time, the report's from 1951, and he goes back into the 1920s and 30s and shows the flow regime in the Scott and Shasta. And interestingly enough, even back then, the low water years, more fish, interestingly enough. And yet, this curtailment is still trying to say more water equals more fish, but I don't think that, the science provides it. So thank you, Ms. Nielsen, for your work on this. Look forward to more information. And if there's some way, even with that information, to be posted on our website, as it's updated, all the better.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sure, Zakowski, just a question for you.
Sure.
On the Wales report, he worked for the Fish and Game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When was that published? Right?
1951. I'll send a copy. You have one? Okay. It's real interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, you've talked about it in the past. Yeah. I didn't realize you worked for the Fish and Game.
Yeah, it's the department's own data that they say they never have enough of.
to emphasize the importance of this issue for ag, I was going to take Supervisor Nixon's place in one of the groups, and I thought Supervisor Oakland was just a nice lady that knew business very well. She told me how much she knew about fish. And well, you have to have fish. Like you said, agriculture wants to walk across the back of fish on the Scott and Shasta and the Klamath River. And so I appreciate her stepping forward with her expertise and biological expertise on the salmon. We did get the data. 1992 for the Klamath River was a low flow year, and the cohorts after that, I think it was 37,000 returned that year, and then 212,000, 197,000 outlet migrates from 1992. Low water year on the Klamath main stem. I believe it was fish bulletin number 34. I'd have to look it up. It had a quote in there. It said that the Shasta River was once known for large salmon runs, and it was published, I believe, in 1929 or 1930. Coincidentally, 1931, 80,000 Chinook swam up the Shasta River, which is the high mark year that's recorded, and that's what the fishing game quotes quite a bit. It's the 1931 year. I'm getting a nod from a fish biologist. That's good. I remember the right year. And to back up your comments, Ms. Nilsen, on agriculture, agriculture's been in the Shasta Valley since the 1850s. So you had 80 years of unregulated agriculture. And then we had one of the highest salmon runs that year. So putting the figure of agriculture is the troublemaker is very troubling. It's frustrating to point it that way.
Those are good points, but let's not go back in the past, because I got to tell you, for the 20 plus years I've lived here, the snow isn't what it used to be. We have to look forward, because I think if you were to go to the coast, the fishermen would tell you the same thing, right? Time would pass, you know, how things were different, so to speak.
Well, I was bragging on the historical data and how that relates
to... Right, and so when you talk about the out-migration, if we had those right now, we wouldn't be having this issue, I can assure you of that.
Oh,
right?
I'd like to return to that time. Yeah.
And so, you know, I appreciate that, I want to look forward to it. This is what we're going to do. I've been articulating about the mountain lakes. If that's what we can get done, let's do that. The opportunity is there, and we need to focus on things we can do.
My point was to look at the historical data and say that, you know, that year was low. Yeah. We want to repeat those years, because that's where success
is. I think what triggered this, because back in the 1800s, ag was completely different than what it is now.
It is.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about wells, deep wells, drilling, bore cuttings, all those kind of things, right? The population was a lot smaller. That's something that we need to kind of convey to the authorities. Our population has gone down in Siskiyou County, so the usage, you know, should basically be the same, right, if not less. So, you know, I appreciate what we're trying to do. I think there's more dialogue, but let's just focus on moving forward.
No,
I don't think the historical piece is going to help us in any semblance, if you will.
I would disagree. I'd say the historical presence, you know, shows, you know, 1992, low water year. If we were to repeat that in the future,
yeah,
you would have success, but I'll stop there.
Yeah, but we can have that offline discussion, because we are going to have to agree to disagree.
Yeah, which is fine. Yeah, and then in regards to where was I at? Oh, one way I thought of opposing this, Ms. Nilsen, is a letter of scientific questions. Sorry, might be along these lines, but why was there a high flow? Why was there a look at 2018 or 2015 or whatever year, the questions should be asked to the Fish and Game, or NOAA, or NIMS. What was their rationale for why those were successful years? And just kind of lay out the data for those years. Why was the scientific questions to be asked? And the reason I ask that is just like the sucker fish in Klamath Lake. For 20 some plus years, it's been to inflate the lake level, and the sucker fish has dropped dramatically. So are they focused on the non-native predatory fish? And I'm talking about the sucker fish up there. Is there other factors they're focused on as well? Ocean conditions that may have changed as well that they need to look at. Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, sir, as your concept.
Something that we need to keep in mind is that cowfish and wildlife, and I don't know if NIMS is on board with this as well, but I assume that because they've done a presentation here in the past. They look at success of out-migrants as a 3% return. I've never agreed with that. I think it should be much higher than that, but they're happy at 3%. So in essence, if a million are out, they're only expecting 30,000 coming back. And they can cap it at that. And that's an element that we don't dig into, that there's an actual cap on how many fish can be in the system. When we introduced IDAG injection, the agencies came a little bit uncorked about well, the system can only handle X amount of fish. When they're left to themselves, they know what they're doing, the fish. But we seem to have an artificial limit to how many can come in the system and still be healthy.
All noted. There will be follow-up.
No, thank you. Right. I didn't mean to give you homework that fish.
No, that's what I'm here for.
So if I could, just real quick. So, you know, this can't be a one-off. This has got to be a regular routine report. Where are we? What's in queue? Where are we with the mountain lakes? Where are we with any and all these kind of things? Because we don't have presence in, quote-unquote, the media, I think, if you will. Our local paper doesn't show up here anymore, right? If you want to call it a local paper. So it's how do we get that out if we're trying to present? We do have a new public information officer coming on board, right now. You know, maybe that's one of the tasks. But, you know, where are we getting in the media? I will tell you that Supervisor Chris, they just had an article, and I think it was a Chronicle. I have to revisit because I have numerous publications that I subscribe to, but they talked about the Tule Lake Basin. The refuge is going to dry up. They're trying to save the sucker fish as we speak right now. They're trying to do that.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you can read into that whatever you want, but there's no water up there, so that's what they're trying to do.
The water went downstream.
I'm not trying to point a finger. I'm just saying that there's this thing is out, you know, out there. If it's in the Chronicle or the LA Times, we need to make sure we get our message out there. If that is the case,
absolutely right. Yeah, it's true. I agree with you absolutely on that. It's reaching national media now. The Klamath Project.
I'm reading it in the Post, I'm reading it in the New York Times, I'm reading it in the BBC.
Yeah, so it probably is perfect time for the public information officer. That's something you've been championing for a while, too.
From the very beginning.
Yeah. With that, Ms. Nielsen, I guess we'll close this one.
Yes.
I believe you'll be up for the next subject.
I am.
And for the recording here, some of you might wonder why I pause a little bit for the recording. Sometimes we get too much data in one recording, so I pause a little bit. So when it's on the recording and on the minutes. So I've just done that here, Miss Wendy. And we'll go into item 7G, the decommissioning comments. Ms. Nielsen.
It's me again, Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. And yes, this item is regarding the county's comments on the draft environmental impact statement for proposed dam removal. I was going to go through my history on where the genesis of this up until now. You guys have heard it several times, but there was a lengthy conversation on the previous topic, so I want to help make this one go along quicker if possible. And so if anyone is interested in that history, they can go back to the April 5th board meeting and listen to those. On March 4th of 2022, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission released the draft environmental impact statement for proposed dam removal or decommissioning of the Lower Klamath Project. Comments were due yesterday, and the board had previously provided direction for our outside legal counsel and Lossaman LLP to submit comments on behalf of the county, which is consistent with how we've submitted items to FERC previously. First of all, I would like to thank Natalie Reed, our assistant county counsel, for her assistance in pulling these comments together and getting them submitted by the deadline. I'd also like to thank Paul Wieland with Nossaman LLP and Chelsea Murphy and Ian Todd with SWCA Environmental Consultants, and they are our technical consultants regarding the dam removal efforts. And we did successfully submit the comments on the draft EIS to FERC yesterday. Those are available through the FERC website, but we will also make them available on our county website. And anyone who would like a copy emailed to them, please feel free to reach out to me. It is a lengthy document in that it not only includes comments on the draft environmental impact statement, but also includes all previous comments provided to FERC regarding efforts of decommissioning the Lower Klamath Project. And so just to highlight a few items, or else I'd be up here for 2 hours. As noted in our comments, on multiple occasions, the county has expressed concerns regarding the potential impacts of dam removal on imperiled species, water quality, and the overall health of the Klamath River ecosystem, as well as other environmental and societal impacts, including air quality, climate change, cultural resources, hazardous materials, and traffic impacts, in addition to socioeconomic impacts on the local economy. The county has a strong vested interest in ensuring that FERC considers the project's entire range of consequences on the county and its residents, and most of the county's comments and concerns have gone largely unaddressed by Klamath River Renewal Corporation and the states of California and Oregon, but specifically California, considering our jurisdiction. And before I move on, I would also like to thank Rick Dean and his team for comments that were incorporated as part of our submittal specific to his department's responsibility. So the draft environmental impact statement only analyzes two alternatives, the no action and the proposed action. FERC has ignored its obligation to analyze all reasonable alternatives and specific requests and past comments to analyze a phased approach alternative and a federal takeover alternative. Long-standing CEQ guidance clearly explains that the range of alternatives FERC is obligated to consider includes all reasonable alternatives, which must be rigorously explored and objectively evaluated. The statement in the draft EIS describing the purpose and need for the project is improperly narrow, essentially precluding any alternative that has the potential to reduce the significant environmental impacts as compared to the KRRC's and Pacific Core's dam removal vision. In short, it is presented to preclude all alternatives to dam removal. The project documentation relies on outdated technical studies and surveys, with most being more than a decade old and some being substantially older. This is inconsistent with prevailing practices in undertaking environmental review of major infrastructure projects. The fire management plan that is central to the analysis must be further amended to address previously raised stakeholder concerns, especially in light of increasing catastrophic wildfires in Siskiyou County. The analysis of socioeconomic effects, including environmental justice concerns, relies on outdated information to such an extent that it is unreliable and not a reasonable basis for impact analysis. Claims that that populations of federally endangered Lost River Sucker and Short-Nosed Sucker in the reservoirs, which will be extirpated, are sink populations, are conjecture, and ignore the value of spatial diversity as a means to reduce the population level impacts of stochastic events. KRRC has refused to conduct monitoring for juvenile fish and lacks a basis in science for the contention that the reservoir populations do not reproduce. The EIS should include an evaluation of the potential negative impacts related to suspended sediments and a professional engineering analysis of rim stability. The permanent loss of reservoir-based recreation activities caused by dam removal should be considered a significant impact requiring mitigation. The EIS should explain with more specificity the conclusion that the project would mitigate all potential groundwater impairments post-drawdown. And there are a range of impacts that are properly addressed through state and local environmental and land use controls, including with respect to waste disposal, temporary housing, dust abatement, hazardous materials management, and wastewater management and disposal. FERC should be clear that the applicants must comply with all state and local regulatory requirements that address these and other public health and safety issues prior to taking any action to implement the proposed action. Again, these are just some bulleted highlights of what is included in the county's comments on the draft environmental impact statement. These are provided in more detail in the attachment to Nossaman's cover letter to the comments, and they're provided in an Excel table. Again, that is available for the public to view through the FERC website right now, but we will get it on the county's website, and I'm happy to send it out to anybody who may be interested. And so just wanted to provide a brief report out of the comments that were provided yesterday or submitted.
Just quickly, I understand they extended the date by 7 days. Is that true?
Did they?
That's what I'm hearing.
So, I will look into that. Okay, because we were just focused on getting them submitted.
Yeah, I
don't think there would really be any changes to our comments.
Understood. It's just
but that is interesting. Yeah, obviously I wasn't paying attention to that yesterday.
Thank you for the great report.
Anything else, Supervisor Cummings?
No.
Supervisor Orgen or Bell's Rhythm? That was a great summary.
Thank you.
I won't get into the details of all the stuff, but you know, the public may, just for public perception, they may read it and say, why didn't you include this or that or that or this, or why does this say it a certain way or that said a certain way? There's an intelligent reason why everything's put in there for the way it is, for the reasons that they are put in to accurately present the case as best we can for the county.
Correct.
Can you send it to me?
Yes, we'll do.
Add it to the file. Yes. Thank you.
All right. With that, we'll let you sit back down.
Okay.
Item 7H. I understand this will take about a minute.
Yes, it will. And
it's
me.
Okay.
Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. This is Justin, the first reading of an ordinance amending Chapter 8 of Title 2 of the Siskiyou County Code regarding the county purchasing system. And this is just to make reference in the county code that the county purchasing policy will set limits within the policy where it can within regulation. This is consistent with a previous ordinance that reflected that purchasing limits would be detailed in the purchasing policy. And again, just to make clear to the board and to the public, the purchasing policy is approved by the board. So there still is an approval process by the board before any limitations are set.
Questions of my colleagues?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second.
We can do the second on the May 17th in order to give time to publish. So,
second motion, second or
Thank you. Okay, Supervisor Kopczak.
This is the proposed motion, recommended motion. Is that what's being
motion maker recommended motion?
Yeah, I'm sorry. If you said that, I didn't hear it. I just want to make sure because you have to be reading everything. That's fine. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, Supervisor Kopczak.
Aye.
Thank you. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
I'll be an aye.
Thank you.
We'll now do public hearings. That was under a minute, I think. We'll now do public hearings. For item 8A, I'll just skip through right away. I believe for the Manly Agricultural Preserve, that's being canceled. Am I correct?
So I just have a question of council. Do we need to open this in any way before canceling it, or we can just cancel the agenda, drop the item from the agenda?
I'm sorry, this is item 8A?
A, as in apple, yes.
No, we can't. If we're not rescheduling it, we can simply drop it.
No motion necessary on that, Mr. Kiernan?
Since it's a public hearing, just to clarify things, it might be good.
All right.
It's canceled. You can't even open it. Why would you do that?
Okay. You know what? You're right. I agree with you. Just cancel.
Okay. Sounds fine.
Thank you.
Now, item 8B, I'll open the hearing and reading the order presentation in the record.
Yes, this is a first reading of a zone change ordinance, but I also see that included in the packet is ag preserve resolutions, two resolutions that deal with ag preserves. To amend Williamson Act contract, also a rescission and reentry, and this is for the many zone change, Z22-02 project.
Presentation with staff report.
Thank you. This is Bernadette Sisson, Assistant Planner. This project is a proposed zone rezone of 2 acres of a 10.9-acre parcel and 2 acres of a 207.89-acre parcel from prime agricultural to rural residential agricultural in order to correct a mapping error. The rezone is necessary in order to effectuate the boundary line adjustment, which was proposed in order to consolidate all lands improved for agricultural production onto a single 393-acre parcel. It was reviewed by the Planning Commission during their March meeting, where they conditionally approved the boundary line adjustment and recommended board approval of the zone change. The project site is located west of Fort Jones and south of Scottsboro Road. Proposed resultant parcel A consists of a hillside land restricted by poor rocky soils, which severely limit the use for the existing agricultural operation, which exists on proposed resultant parcel B. Because there is no substantial evidence that the proposed zone change may have a significant effect on the environment, staff is recommending that the zone change be found exempt from CEQA pursuant to section 15061B3, the common sense exemption, and section 15301 for existing facilities. The properties within the boundary line adjustment are within two different agricultural preserves and encumbered by two separate Williamson Act contracts. In order for the BLA to be recorded, the board would need to first approve the proposed agricultural preserve amendment and Williamson Act contract rescission and reentry. No land is proposed to be added or removed from the preserve or contract because of this project. The boundaries are simply being modified within the existing preserves. Staff recommends determining the agricultural preserve amendment and rescission and reentry of the Williamson Act contracts exempt from CEQA pursuant to section 15317, open space easements or contracts. Planning staff is proposing that this project be found consistent with zoning, general plan, and Scott Valley area plan. Should the board agree, there is a suggested motion in the agenda worksheet. Mr. Minnie is present today, and thank you.
Thank you. Presentation of correspondence.
So far, there's been no correspondence at the clerk's level.
Presentation of reports, arguments, or evidence by staff or other county departments. I'll just say on the record, seeing none. Proponents, arguments, and or evidence. Opponents, arguments, and or evidence. Anything online, Ms. Stanley?
Showing none online.
All right. Public comments? None in house?
Showing none online.
Will be no rebuttals. We'll not close the hearing.
Correct.
And discussion or motions by the board.
If there's no discussion, I'd make the recommended motion.
I'll second.
And hopefully expedite it to the May 3rd meeting.
May 3rd works.
Perfect.
Okay.
Staff would recommend that the ag reserve portion of the project be heard at the June 14th meeting, as it has to be 30 days after the second reading of the zone change.
So the ag preserve, you said to June 14th?
Yes.
A motion maker concurs?
No.
Question, sir?
I want it on May 3rd.
So you're saying
this
after
a year and a half process, and
the
I know
zone
that
change.
I get what we're doing is process, but it doesn't help the person bringing it. It just is a delay factor. Is there any way to expedite it?
The zone change would not take effect until 30 days after the second reading. Therefore, we could not do the approval of that preserve amendment.
So 30 days after that is...
And we're not having a board meeting on the 7th because of the election. So June 14th would be the soonest.
And a special meeting won't do it.
Correct.
Dang. Well,
I've been waiting this long.
I know. I'm just trying to help you out. It is what it is, yes. The motion maker agrees.
All right. And second, please encourage. All right.
Okay. All righty. Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Okay.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
Aye. And Mr. Meany, thank you for your understanding, sir.
Speedy government, I understand.
Yeah, but thank you, sir. With that, we will recess as the Board of Supervisors and convene as the Flood Control Water Conservation District. Any public comment, Ms. Hanley?
Showing on the line.
Consent agenda, wishes of my colleagues.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, Director Kopsa.
Aye.
Director Valenzuela.
Yep.
Director Ogren.
Aye.
And Director Chris.
Aye. Minute approval, March 29th.
I've heard no corrections for those.
Wishes of my colleagues?
Director Kopsev?
Aye.
Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Chris.
Aye. We will adjourn as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors and go into, unless there's any board staff reports people want to give.
Clarification, the minute approval is for the board, not for the flood control, is that correct?
Oh, yes, you're right. You're right. That is March 29. That was a special meeting of the Board of Supervisors only.
Yeah.
But we did it under flood.
We can certainly go back.
Circle back and do it?
Sure.
All right.
Okay. Yes, March 29th, that was a Board of Supervisors minutes, and no corrections.
Same motion maker? Same seconder?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Thank you.
With that, is there any Board of Staff reports? What will we get right now?
Just one. I'm heading down to Sacramento. It's legislative days for the State Association of Counties. I have to figure out what my spiel is. I have to introduce Governor Newsom to the masses, if you will.
Right.
Come up with several scenarios. If you, with that, if I can get out, I am scheduled to meet with the new CAL FIRE chief down in Sacramento this afternoon.
Oh, some big stuff.
You know, well, you know, one of the things, I'll just say this on the same subject of fire and wildfire danger. You know, I haven't seen a lot on the CAL FIRE side. State highways, you go out towards McLeod, you know, you go out to a lot of areas, you're seeing some mastication. I've seen that in the Chass area. Something we're doing at the county, at the local level, you know, road department. You know, we have we have a free dump day coming for, we had one in Wairika, we had one in, you know, the green waste program, you know. So, you know, these are some of the, what I would call positive things that we need to kind of make sure, think our PIO officer, person that's going to come on board, to what we are doing. Because we are doing a lot of things that I think people, it's too easy to get into the quote unquote glass half empty side of the equation, stay in the glass half full type side. Thank you.
Is there any other board reports?
Interesting time.
All right. With that, we'll go into closed session.